My name is Patricia C. Reedy. I am a writer. I write fantasy. A lot of it gets published as children's books. I don't write it that way. I write it for me. And I've never finished a book that I didn't, including the one that, the very first one that Jane Yolen asked me to do for her children's line specifically. I finished it up and I called her up and I said, Jane, I don't think this is a children's book. I really, she says, just send it to me. And of course, that was dealing with dragons, and it was published as a kid's book. And many of them have been since. And, but I still, I don't, I just, I've simply learned not to tell my editor and agent that because they'll just roll their eyes at me.
Could you tell us about your earliest years, and did you ever think you wanted to be a writer?
I never wanted to be a writer. I just always wrote. I grew up in suburban Chicago, in Maywood and Hinsdale. I just always wrote stuff, but it never occurred to me that I could actually make a living at it. In fact, I had a when I was in college, I did an as annual goal setting. These are my goals. I did that every year, and in fact, I still do. But I had this plan all worked out where I was going to, get a job in. Well, first it was biology, and then it was business, and I was going to write in my spare time. And I had my goal was to sell three short stories by the time I was 35. And I figured if I could do that, then I could keep selling short stories. And when I hit 40 and had my midlife crisis, I could quit my day job and be a writer with already having a track record. I had this it was a
Beautiful.
really good plan, except that I sold my first novel before I was 30. So that kind of blew that out of the water. And
Or accelerated it at least.
It just didn't go the way I planned it at all. So I sold my first novel in 1980. 1980 was a big year.
Now, before then, had you written for school papers or done anything along
I
those
had
lines?
done in high school, I took the journalism class one semester, which required you to write articles for the paper. Which I did. I think one of them got published. I think I had a total of 4 inches. Your grade was in part based on this, so this was something you
Right.
paid a lot of attention to.
Do you remember what it was about?
No, it was reporting on some school event. There was also a school magazine, and I had a couple of things in that. But that was, was it was don't even remember. There was one that was it was very much a parody piece about all the little after school clubs. And and I remember there were two things that I did for that. But they were all pretty much nonfiction sorts of things. And I was trying to write fiction. I mean, I started my first novel when I was in seventh grade. But just it really wasn't getting anywhere. And I wasn't doing it seriously. It was there wasn't the internet then, so there wasn't any way of getting things out there and sharing them with other like-minded people, and I didn't know very many other people that were like-minded. So it was kind of difficult.
What about your reading taste? Did you
I read
ever learn to
everything.
read?
Did I ever learn to read? Did I ever learn to read? I picked it up. I mean, I didn't pick it up before school. A lot of people do, but I did not. My mom didn't have time. She was raising, at that point, there were three of us, and she was also helping my dad start the manufacturing business. And there just was not time for that. But she read to us. I mean, it's some of my very earliest memories of my mother are of her reading to us various things. When I was, I think, six, we had the big family vacation where we took the train down to New Orleans to, and the two things I remember about, there are three things I remember about that trip. One of them was the, we went to a shrimp factory and got the tour of the factory and saw them shelling the shrimp and bringing in the shrimp boats, and that was very exciting for a six-year-old. And the other was the park in the kids' park in New Orleans that we went to, that had the Spanish moss hanging down from the trees, and I'd never seen it. I had no, and was like, whoa, what is that stuff? That is so cool, you know, when you're six. And but the other memory that I have of that trip is of the train ride of my mother sitting with my brother and my sister and me in the little compartment that we had reading Little Women to us.
Was there a particular book or author that really caught your imagination?
I was enamored of fantasy and fairy tales from the very beginning. I read fairy tales and folklore. You know, I read the Oz books. I collected most of those, the Oz books and the Narnia Chronicles. And then I branched out into sort of actual fairy tales. Hello, sweetheart. And I read all of the Andrew Lang fairy books. I read, and then I, you know, kept going, and to the point where I think I was in fifth or sixth grade when my mother gave me my copy of Bullfinch's Mythology, the great big fat one. And then they were still running out of things to keep me interested in, so she asked one of my aunts who shared that interest, and so that was when I got my copy of Beowulf and El Cid. And when I was in high school, I got my copy of the Kalevala, and you know, it just kind of went. So yeah. I have always been interested in those, and of course somewhere in there I discovered that there was adult fantasy stuff. And when I was in high school, Tolkien hit big, and you know, never looked back.
Yeah.
Started off at the Hospital Association as a financial analyst, and then I went to work for B. Dalton in their financial in their financial department, and which was wonderful. I got a book discount.
So did you ever get a paycheck, or
just give it straight to the bookstore? True. You know, every time I go for like an autographing or something, I tease the bookstore owners that the reason they have authors in to do autographings is because they know that the author is going to walk out with a huge lot of books, and it's going to make their sales day, right, even if nobody buys the author's books. So I transferred to downtown Minneapolis, and at that point things got a little hairy because I had been writing on my lunch hour. But when I got downtown, to working downtown, I discovered that I had a lot of other friends who worked downtown, and all of them wanted to have lunch. And so I ended up having lunch out with my friends 5 days a week, and I had no more writing time. And I was finding this extremely frustrating. And I was complaining about it to one of my good friends, who said, well, you know, I have the same problem. And that was Pamela Dean, who's the author of The Secret Country. At the time, neither of us had published anything. And I don't remember which of it was that looked at the other one and said, we got the same problem. Why don't we have one day a week when we have lunch with each other and we'll just write? And so for about a year and a half, once a week, we went out and, you know, with our little notepads, and we'd meet on the corner, and we'd walk down to the restaurant, and you know, yakking away. And the minute we sat down, it was pull out your pen, start writing.
Nice.
And we knew by the third week we knew exactly what we were going to order, so we didn't have to look at the menu, and we'd sit there and write until the food came, and then the food came, and we could talk to each other while we ate, but then you had to put the food aside and work again until lunch hour was over. We could go back, and both of us got a tremendous amount done, and it was very useful. I think it helped me finish up what I was working on. Then I don't even remember exactly whether that was Shadow Magic or Daughter of Witches at that point, but it was a lot of fun, and it was very useful, and it was really good training. Pamela said once later that after doing that for a year and a half, she could sit down anywhere and write anywhere and write for 45 minutes, but then she had to stop and have some cottage cheese. And you know, and it's the same way. I mean, I never had any trouble after that. Between that and writing in the company cafeteria at my first job, I did not have any trouble at all writing in airports, in coffee shops, or wherever I happened to be.
So tell us about when you finally did publish, and there was a hiatus between signing a deal and getting the book back. When you first saw the first book and it came to you, do you remember that experience?
It was all having the first book, you know, actually in my hot little hand. It, by the time the first book got there, it was so late, and there'd been so much stuff going on with it. You know, it was really exciting. It was really cool.
Yeah.
But it was also tied up with, that was when I was going to my second Worldcon, but my first Worldcon as a pro writer. And it got there like the day before the convention. You know, so it was tied up with so many other things that it doesn't stand out as its own thing. What stands out is the acceptance, because I had been sending the book around for about 2 years, and I had sent it to Ace Books, and they, you know, it takes forever. I mean, rejections come fairly quickly, but acceptances, you know, take a while, and sometimes even the rejections take a while. So I'd sent it to Ace Books, and after it sat there for about 3 months, I called them up and I said, you know, called up the receptionist, the, you know, person who logged things in, and I said, you know, I submitted a manuscript about 3 months ago, and I was just checking to make sure I hadn't got lost in the mail coming back. And it's always good policy to blame the post office rather than the publishing company, because you're trying to sell things to the publishing company, you know. She said, no, we haven't sent it back. We can if you want. Oh, no, keep it, fine. And so after that, about every 2 months, I would call, and it had been there about, 8 or 9 months, I think. And I was making my phone call, and it was on late Friday afternoon. It was sort of like, okay, fine. You know, nobody's going to be doing anything. I'll do it now. So I called, and I said, you know, gave my little spiel. You know, I get lost in the mail, and there's this pause. And then the voice at the other end of the phone said, didn't you get our letter? And I said, what letter? And they said, the one saying we want to buy your book. I'm going, no, I didn't get your letter. Could you send me a copy, please?
Yeah.
It was. I was so glad it wasn't a video phone.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they didn't even have video phones, and I was really glad it was not a video phone.
Exactly.
The post office had indeed lost my first acceptance letter.
You're kidding.
I have a photocopy of it in my file because I have a photocopy of the carbon in my file because they didn't.
Fortuitous, you called.
You know, well. And this is why. It's like, you know, you don't leave it there forever. You give them a reasonable amount of time, and then you make a very polite phone call, because these things happen.
Right.
And I remember that partly because it was such a shock, but partly because when I got off the phone, I realized that that was Minicon weekend, and all of my friends were not at home. They were at Minicon, and I could not get in touch with them.
To brag. Yeah.
And I mean, and I desperately wanted to. I wanted to call her and go, guess what?
Right.
You know, and there was nobody to scream at and go, I just sold my first book. It was really frustrating, but...
Your writing habits now.
Mm-hmm.
Here you are, a professional. You've got quite a few books under your belt and successes. And And has your writing habit changed any since those early days, or?
Well, I don't have to write on my lunch hour anymore. I can sit in my office and do it. But other than that, it's still a matter of grabbing time when I have it and when I can. And 'cause there's always more to do than you have time for. And everything always seems to want to take priority. I was on a panel at a convention once where we had a panel of writers, all of whom were full-time writers, and somebody asked, "Do you get more productive when you don't have a day job?" And everyone on the panel laughed. And down in the end, the first guy said, "I have a day job. My day job is managing my writing career." And it's amazing how much time that takes
So
to
do you
get out of
have
this stuff.
a set schedule you've made for yourself to write?
I do the best when I write every day, even if it's only a sentence or two. That's when I tend to be the most productive. But at this particular point in my life, that's just not feasible. So, like I do, yes, I do what I can when I can. The goal is to write every day. Because that really is it's what works best.
Where do you think the book is going, given Facebook, Twitter, iPads?
What the internet has done is it has made writing accessible. It has made publication of a sort accessible to anybody. You have people out there doing fan fiction. You have websites that are devoted to people's original fiction, where they don't have to go through the gatekeepers. It's both good and bad. It means that the entire world now has access to the slush pile, essentially. And a lot of the slush pile is not very good. But if there's one thing that I've learned, it's that no matter how bad something is, no matter how awful it is, there will be somebody who likes it. And what the internet does is it allows any given writer to find those people. If you're writing for a very niche market kind of thing, it may be difficult to find it. But once you've found the people who liked that kind of thing, you've got an audience to write for, and people who where there's only a couple of hundred people in the United States, maybe, who like this particular kind of fiction. It's not worth the effort for even a small regional press, a lot of the times, to publish something for those people. But now you can write it, and you can find them, and they will get it, and they will understand it, and they will love it to pieces. And with print on demand, they can even have a physical book of it if they want. People are storytellers. Everybody tells stories, even if it's only the dog ate my homework. Everybody tells stories, and this just makes it more visible to everybody. I think it's been the whole idea of storytelling and writing and so on has been seen as something that only very special people did, which I think is just ridiculous. Because, like I said, everybody does it. And I think the internet is breaking that down, if it hasn't completely destroyed that
Can
already.
you summarize briefly the key points of your advice to a prospective young writer?
Not well, okay. The basic ones are first learn to type, because sooner or later you're going to, even if you really prefer doing handwriting, which I think most kids today don't, but even if you do, you're going to have to get it in typewritten form into a computer at some point, because that's really all they'll look at. And it's a whole lot cheaper to know how to do it yourself than to try and pay somebody else to type your handwritten notes. The second one is to read a lot, and not just the stuff that you like. Read everything. You don't have to read a lot of the stuff you don't like. You don't have to read a lot of stuff you hate, but you need to cast a wide net. Mm-hmm. You know, I like fantasy better than anything, but if you look in that library, I've got fantasy, I've got romance, I've got westerns, I've got mystery stories, I've got pretty much every genre that there is in that library. There's way more fantasy and science fiction than there is of anything else, but there's a respectable amount of all those other things. And that's true of every writer whose library I've ever been in. And nonfiction. You know, the writers' nonfiction libraries are really fascinating. Because speaking for myself, you know, you'd be walking through the Barnes and Noble in the section, you know, and you look at the sale books section, and you see something like I got one that was titled "Mad Princes of Renaissance Germany." It's like there is no writer on earth who could resist a title like
I
that.
Would have fought you for the book.
I think it's Andy Rooney who said, you know, I don't wait to have a good idea. If I've got a deadline, I, by God, sit down and have a good idea. You know, you can't wait around for them.
I love the fact that Andy Rooney's also the one who said, why is it of all art forms, writing is the only one that when you've done it, no matter who you are, Nobel Prize winner or not, when you've done it and you hand it to somebody else, they bring out a red pencil. No composer, yes. No musician has yes. ever had to face
everyone's
that.
A critic.
That's right.
Everyone's a critic. Well, it's everybody thinks they can do it better.
Mm-hmm.
Until they actually sit down and try.
It's the most personal of all arts because it goes straight into the middle of our brains. Mm-hmm.
It is imperfect telepathy.
Ah, I like
Beautiful.
That.
I write down my thoughts and I give them to you and they go into, you know, it goes from my head to your head by via this very strange interface.
Right. Imperfect telepathy.
But it is not perfect because, you know, what I use, the words I use may not bring them up for you. But anyway.
I'm intrigued by the craft of writing. How would you define that?
Well, there's two parts to writing, really. There's the craft and there's the art. You know, there's the part that is a skill which you can teach, and there's the part that is the inspiration. And the trouble is that if you have enough inspiration, you can do a decent book, and people will rave over it because it is so uncommon to be able to do that. But if that's all you have, you won't ever get any better, because inspiration is just, it is what it is. The craft is the part that you can improve, and if you start with the emphasis on inspiration and you don't pay attention to the craft, you're not going to get very far.
And how do you improve your craft?
Practice, critique groups, doing critique of other
people actually doing critique.
I have a wall in the office of how to write books, which usually explain to me after the fact what I'm doing.
Right.
I don't know that I've ever actually learned from a how-to-write book a particular technique or something, but they do wonders for clarity, for my personal clarity of mind. And I spend a lot of time, you know, talking with other writers, both in person and on the internet. It's what, you know, my blog is about, writing and the craft of writing, and to some extent at the business of writing, but you know, I try and stick with the craft part. You know, just and practice. You know, a lot of it's just practice and looking at a scene and going, what's wrong with this? There's something wrong. I don't know what it is. What's wrong with it? Until you figure out, oh, that's what it is now. How do I fix it? And you know, whenever you do that, and reading other people. I mean, one of the very first things I remember was when I was writing Shadow Magic, and very, very early in the book, there's a bunch of conversations. You know, very first chapter starts with, and the one with you know, between two people, it was fine. And then I got to where I had four people present in the conversation. I'm going, how do I do this? How am I juggling this? I keep saying he said, she said. Yeah, I can't just say he said, because there's two he's and two she's, and you know, it's going to get all confusing, and how do I do this? And I remember getting up and going to my book wall of fiction and starting, just pulling books at random and looking at dialogue, just saying, how did they do it? I know there's I know it's been done. What did they do? You know, it says, okay, this one says he said, and the next one is she said, and then it's George smoked a cigarette. Oh, okay, and then it's, and just going through and looking for exactly how did they do that, and then it was like, oh okay, fine, I can do that. You know, I can mix it up like that. That'll work, and so that's what I did.
We only have a minute left here.
Okay.
And
that went fast.
Well, you know, but I can go on at great length. once you wind me up and get me started.
But you have writing to do, Patricia. May I remind you, you have a page to write today.
I have a page to write today.
We want to thank you ever so much.
You're welcome.
It's been wonderful.
And, you're welcome.
It's been a great honor and opportunity to listen to you.
And I think our viewers are going to really enjoy this.
Well, I hope so.
And I want to say to our viewers that I like the Cimmerian books just as much as my daughter did. And we read them to each other over and over again. So
and I will just add, since I did all that talking about writing, that the blog is at pcreedy.com.
Okay.
Very good. It'll be on
your webpage.
Yeah.